Thank you. Good morning. My name is Ramiro Lobo. I'm a small farms advisor with the University of California Cooperative Extension in San Diego County. And very pleased to be here between you and lunch. So I'll try to keep you guys on time. And hopefully, if you didn't get enough caffeine from tea, we'll try to kick it up a notch with coffee. This is working, right? Is it on? Not advancing. Okay, I'll just use the arrow. Okay. Okay, as an overview, I'll give you a little bit of background about coffee industry worldwide, coffee industry facts, a little bit about California grown coffee, on the taxonomy, goals and objectives of our little research projects, methods, results, and observations, and then, you know, some concluding comments. Coffee is second to oil in terms of commodities traded worldwide, which is more than 100 billion annually. 500 billion cups of coffee drank daily, 25 million families or people supported worldwide. About 67%+ of coffee grown is grown in the Americas, in the tropical belt for the most part. Finland are the heaviest coffee drinkers worldwide. U.S. is about 25th rank in terms of drinking coffee, but this is the main buyer of coffee. And coffee shops are the fastest growing segment in the restaurant industry today. In terms of the U.S., retail value is $48 billion. 55% of the cups consumed in the U.S. are considered, or people think they are specialty coffee somehow. Whether it's, I guess, McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts, they all try to aim at that specialty coffee market. It provides about 75% of caffeine consumed in the U.S., and like I mentioned earlier, the U.S. is the single largest buyer. Daily consumption among 18 to 24-year-olds at about 35%, although in the next demographic group, 25 to 39, it seems to be declining over the 2014-15 years. Over half of Americans drink coffee, and again, U.S. 25th per capita in coffee consumption. California, coffee has been around California for, I mean, ever since I got there, so I'm assuming it was there before. As I visit growers, several of them have a plant in their backyard. Some of them as an ornamental, as a house plant. I've seen coffees loaded with coffee cherries, coffee fruit on it. But it's never really, it wasn't. So a lot of people like Martha, she's a grower in Southern California, and her plants get loaded with fruit every year as she harvests, processes, and makes her own coffee. So there is a lot of, in terms of backyard, home growing, there is a lot of interest in coffee. And it's a beautiful plant, very easy to grow, lush green. So it's been around, but it wasn't until the early 90s when a colleague of mine, Mark Gaskell and Jay Ruski, in Santa Barbara County, started looking at it in terms of commercial potential. So Mark imported some seeds, and Jay is an organic grower. Owns a farm called Goodland Organics, and started playing with different varieties, and they realized that they grew, and he also was growing, experimenting with tea as well, as a matter of fact. So the plants grew well and produced a lot of beans. So that was the beginning, pretty much, of the commercial grown California coffee, if you will. So they've expanded their program throughout Southern California, through Southern California coast, from St. Louis Obispo, pretty much to San Diego. They now are part of a company called Fringe Coffee, and they kind of offer a package deal. So with this, some of the growers that grow with them are larger growers, you know, large avocado growers who are trying to diversify with plant coffee in between their avocado trees. And what they did, they created a lot of buzz around coffee and a lot of interest from small-scale growers. Some of them are limited resources with the clientele that I try to work with. And so they created a buzz and a lot of interest. I was very skeptical initially as a looking at coffee as a commercial crop in the U.S. because of, I don't know if you know, but coffee prices are at an all-time low today. I mean, that's commodity coffee, which is about $106 a hundredweight. And that is the lowest it's been in decades. So growing coffee, commodity coffee, is not necessarily a good thing to do in San Diego because coffee uses a lot of water, even though it's being used as a replacement for avocado, who also use a lot of water, or at least in association with avocados. So the model that that French and Jay are proposing implies that you got to keep your avocado trees alive, which is something that small-scale growers are trying to get out of. So it doesn't necessarily fit, the situation for really small-scale growers who are limited financially. And then on top of that, if you want to grow with them, it's kind of a package deal. You got to buy their plants and grow with them as a private entity, really. You join them as a member of a club, which many small-scale farmers are very leery of those kind of scenarios, and they just don't have the resources to do it. So given the interest they generated, we decided to start playing with coffee. And as you can see with coffee, just to give you a little bit of background, that's the coffee tree, right? Five actually main species of coffee. They all came from the Arabica, which is the coffee that is grown and consumed mostly, as regarded as higher quality, came out of Ethiopia. And the green line are the oldest, some varieties that sort of remain the same. As a matter of fact, there is a variety here. Without my glasses, I can see, but there is Geisha here somewhere, which has by far become the standard for quality coffee worldwide. And it's been winning Cup of Excellence competitions throughout the Americas. I mean, it won in Honduras, sold at about $80 a pound, in a Cup of Excellence, in an international auction. Guatemala, about $60 a pound. Costa Rica, about $300 a pound in the Cup of Excellence auction. And then in Panama, it set the record at about $800 a pound. I mean, again, these are tiny lots that are sold at those prices, but again, they create a lot of interest. And that is one of the varieties that French coffee is promoting. It's a very special variety, very delicate. It requires a lot of attention to grow it. In the center portion, the Arabicas out of Yemen were taken. So that's where the Tipicas came, which is a lot of varieties grown. I mean, Kona is a typical Guatemalan, and some of the taller varieties. On the other side, some of these coffee from was taken from Yemen to the island of Bourbon, which is now Reunion Island. And this is where most of the varieties that have been grown commercially over the last 50, 60 years came from. The Caturas, the Capuais, the Pacas, they have all been natural mutations or selections of Bourbon coffee. Until Coffee Ross and the Leia Batatrix came aboard and started killing coffee plants all over the world. At that time, there was this other genus here that wasn't necessarily important for the tropics or for tropical America, but it does grow, it's highly tolerant to nematodes, and resistant to the rust, adapted to lower elevations, which is primarily grown in Southeast Asia, in Africa, and some in Vietnam, and some in Brazil. So they found a hybrid in Timor Island that was tolerant or resistant to rust. They crossed it with several lines of descendants of Bourbon, and that gave birth to a lot of the hybrids that are now pretty much what's grown commercially throughout the world. Different genetics, similar genetic makeup of plants are being called different countries based on the local jargon, if you will. But they all came out of a breeding program in Brazil, and then they were sent out to coffee research institutes worldwide where each different accessions adapted better and were named, were given names more in tune with the local culture. So that said, again, Arabica coffee and Bourbon, these are the basis for all commercially grown coffee varieties worldwide. Our goals primarily was plant availability was very limited in California, and if there were, coffee plants were selling for anywhere from $20 to $25 a plant, a seedling plant, which is very expensive. And if you look at plant density using the coffee producing world, you know, you're looking at about 2,000 plants to the acre. That, I mean, in a very in a 6x3 spacing, pretty much, that's a lot of money to plants, right? So what French Coffee, what they were proposing is 500 plants per acre, you know, very wide spacing, similar to where you, to what they were doing in Hawaii. But in Hawaii, it's kind of dry land for the most part, and here we were going to irrigate it and interplant it between avocados. So 500 plants to the acre, I guess it made it more digestible, if you will, financially. But again, very limiting for small-scale farmers. So we wanted to learn how to grow coffee plants. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's just you get the seeds, you know, you put them in the ground, grow them, and nurture them until they are ready for transplant, right? This is seedlings. There is quite a bit of coffee being grown on grafted plants and using the Robusta or the Canephora genus species as a rootstock, mainly in areas where nematodes are present, which is the case in Hawaii. Most of Hawaii coffee is grown on grafted plants. We're seeing a lot of that in also in the tropics, Guatemala, Costa Rica. They are doing a lot of grafting on several lines of Canephora. And the other thing is they're looking at tissue culture as well as a propagation method to retain the identity of the plants that are being propagated. World Coffee Research out of Texas has been doing a lot of work with tissue culture in coffee plants, but they were having some issues. But they finally were able to send a batch of plants, of clonal plants, to Central America, and they're trawling out in field production. They were having a lot of issues with where to get the cells to propagate to tissue culture because of the growth habits of the plant. But I guess they are fine-tuning that, and we'll see more of that in the future. So we wanted to look at, the propagation, the seedlings, the nursery aspects of it. We wanted to evaluate varieties in full grown. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention with this group here, French Coffee, what these guys do, they pretty much build a controlled environment chamber for every plant. And that was also another very limiting factor for small-scale growers. Under this system, it gets very expensive to really establish your coffee plants, right? So one of the things that we would like to see at some point is manage, establish a monocrop plot of coffee, protect it with high tunnels early on, and then get them going, but at a higher density so that you minimize your footprint and increase your management intensity. I'm sorry, back here. So plant propagation, we started with source seeds from about 13 different accessions, seed them in nursery trays. 40 days later, they germinated, put them in nursery liners and grew them for about 6 months, and voila, they were ready to go. And we were able to make some of these plants available to local growers, and also we were able to establish a few trials with those. In terms of nursery plants, they were very clean, didn't have any disease problems at all. So it's very easy to grow and propagate coffee plants from seed. In terms of materials, we evaluated 13 varieties at three different locations, established an organic trial at Cal Poly Pomona. Plants were growing well, really well, except that this is our trial, as you can see, in August 2017, October. Plants were growing, the average growth in height, varieties were growing pretty much similarly, really. They were all pushing, except for one that was higher. Typica seemed to be higher, so we expected that they would grow faster vertically. Trunk diameter, same. Canopy. Plants were looking great initially, and then winter came. So at that location, they all died, essentially. All the plants collapsed. Another trial at South Coast Research and Extension Center in Irvine, The plants are doing well as well, and we had a cold spell in January. They came out of it. They were pushing growth. I fertilized them. I thought, this is great. They survived. Then we had another cold spell in February, and they pretty much killed most of them, not all of them. But we wanted to see survival rate kind of without any protection, and some of them survived. So it's kind of encouraging. We had a trial as an understory crop to cherimoyas, which is another common crop in Southern California. And the plants really survive. All of them survive, but they haven't shown any growth. I mean, excess shade limits the amount of growth. And so we don't think that is a good environment for them, too much shade. But it is worth looking into some shaded type structure because the plants survived. They didn't get damaged by sun or by cold weather or wind, so they are doing pretty much sitting there, dormant. Citizen science. We made a lot of plants available to master gardeners scattered throughout pretty much Southern California, and now we've created some sort of an information loop, and plants in backyard type settings are doing really well. So that's encouraging, and we'll continue with that to gather more information about specific varieties adapted to various locations. In terms of summary and conclusions, we think that given the demand for specialty coffee, there is some potential for coffee as a commercial crop in California. Again, French coffee, their model, they are proposing a $60 a pound price for the growers that participate in the program. We think that's a little bit ambitious, but again, for coffee, coffee adapt well, and it's just about fine-tuning the system, site selection. You got to be on a frost-free area, and we think that if you protect the plants in some sort of a tunnels, you know, to get them established, they can be grown successfully. But then a lot of other issues will have to be looked at. I mean, labor, processing, environmental issues, and a number of things. California-grown coffee has got to be of the highest quality to compete successfully and to sell at the premium prices that we're looking at. But again, we're looking at this ag tourism aspect of it. I mean, beyond the coffee, how can we market this similar to what's going on with tea? Variety selection, cultural practices, processing methods, and poor harvest are critical elements to preserve the quality of coffee throughout the chain. And we'll have to work on those aspects once we get coffee plants producing beans or cherries, which I think will probably be there in a couple more years. We're continuing with this. We're establishing now. We've sourced seed from about 18 varieties that we have just now seeded, and we'll continue establishing trials with growers throughout Southern California. Thank you. I'm sorry for running over. Oh, the Santa Anas are killer. I mean, they actually really were responsible for about 50% of the damage in our plant because they were exposed. Then a lot of whiplash, so we had to stake the plants because they were, you know, just swinging. And the east side of the plants got blasted. But they came out of it. Once we stake them, they came out of it. So, it's about specific microclimates, specific locations, and then protect them.
It looked like they were doing really well at home sites, which would be very protected, blocked.
Yeah, I mean, you usually don't have the wind. Yeah, exposed to the winds that you would in an open field. So, but again, you know, our model for small-scale growers is, I mean, why, if you're going to put 500 plants in an acre, why scatter them over 40,000 square, you know, feet when you can put them in a solid block and manage it the way, you know, it needs to be managed and then see if it works, you know, on a more, and then the plants would protect themselves, you know, you create that environment. Any other question? How much water is available?
Yeah, and also the expenses of the water.
Well, how much water is available? It depends where you are. I mean, that's the disparity of of nature and how unfair it is at times. In San Diego County, where I am, we on the coastal plain, we get about 7 inches of water, precipitation, and it increases gradually as you move inland, up until the ranch, you know, inland, to about 30 inches. So our price for water, 95% of our agriculture is irrigated with low volume systems, and our price per acre foot of water is about $1,200 on average. So if you're an avocado grower in San Diego County, avocados total water you need is about 4.5 acre feet, and we get about 1 foot, you know, in precipitation where avocados grow. So growers have to supplement anywhere from 3 to 3.5 acre feet of water a year, which means that they, before they do anything else, just to keep their groves alive, they are spending anywhere from $3,600 to $4,200 on water alone. So it makes it very hard to compete. I mean, this is when you buy city water. The other thing is that the water delivery system for agriculture in California is the same water that goes to your house. So I guess if our plants had teeth, they would have really good teeth, because they had that many waters kind of supplemented with fluoride and all those different things. So the getting a good well that produces good quality water in San Diego County or Southern California is almost like striking gold, really. I mean, it's that valuable. What happens is most groundwater that we pump out of the ground is usually poor quality, so growers have to blend it. And avocados is one of the most sensitive crops to salt. I mean, they are very, very picky. So that's what it is. And I used to joke with growers in San Diego that really there is no legal crop that could allow you to succeed in California these days. But now I guess that scenario is changing since we've legalized marijuana. So any other question? No? Thank you.